You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and yes, that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, Alex and I welcome a very special guest to the program, NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Iron, Adam Pearce. Adam will be joining us shortly. My name is David, and I'm joined today by my good friend Alex. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm doing well. It's not every day you get to talk to a world champion.
Yeah, this should be a lot of fun. Really excited to have Adam on the program, and certainly appreciate him taking the time to join us.
Absolutely.
Now, real quick, before we give him a call and get him on the air, there are a few hot-button wrestling topics I thought you and I should kick around. And, you know, Alex, I was very disappointed to hear that Cameron, WWE Diva Cameron, was arrested recently on DUI charges, and even more disappointed to hear than it. Perhaps she was trying to bribe her way out of the situation. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. It's very unfortunate. And, you know, it could affect the career of her other dancing partner and Brodus Clay as well.
You never know. And I think what is so sad about this, it's not just a wrestling issue. This is a professional sports issue and a celebrity issue, is that these people get to a certain level in their careers. And I don't know, maybe they feel like they're infallible. But, you know, here's a girl that's got a great spot right now. That's what's such a shame about this, Alex, is that, you know, she's not really wrestling, but she's working for a major promotion and she's in a good spot. This could really affect her career. As you said, also maybe the career of her fellow dancer, Naomi. It's just a real shame, and you hope she hasn't blown maybe her once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
You know, and this isn't, unfortunately, the only DUI we've heard about in Tampa. And hopefully, you know, those guys learn to be responsible, I guess, because unfortunately, you know, we discussed the career aspect, but they're putting other people's lives in danger, and it's not a good thing to mess around with DUIs.
Yeah, that's a good point, the other people on the road. And the other thing real quick before we move on is that this bribing potentially of a police officer, and of course this is all rumors, and we're not trying to, you know, to spread rumors here, but this is what we've heard. But if there's an element of truth to the fact that she was trying to get out of it because, quote-unquote, who she is, this is something we do hear a lot. Football players, basketball players, that whole thing of, don't you know who I am?
Absolutely. And, you know, I guess it's a byproduct of someone taking fame the wrong way, unfortunately.
Yeah. So how about you? Anything on your mind here before we call the world champion?
Last week, there was a lot of MMA news going around about ducking fights. And Jonathan Coachman was a guest co-host on the Scott Van Pelt show with Ryan Russillo. And he brought up Taboo Tuesday 2005, where he was supposed to wrestle Steve Austin. And he brought it up as one of the most disappointing moments in his wrestling career. He was excited to wrestle Austin. And it's just unfortunate how that all went about. Because, you know, I mean, I don't imagine Coachman was on the end that, you know, made decisions that forced Austin, or Austin felt the need that he didn't want to do the match or whatever. So it's kind of interesting, and kind of, I guess, it sucked for Coachman, too.
Yeah, now was he a jobber in that match? Was he going to get squashed?
You know, the reports are, and the reports are the reports, but the reports are is that the match was for Jim Ross's career, mm-hmm. and I guess Steve Austin had assumed that he was going to win the match, and then when he found out that he wasn't, he backed out of the match. You know, it's just unfortunate that the turn of events happened like that. And Coachman on these ESPN shows, recently he did one with Todd Grisham, who's another WWE alum, mm-hmm. and Coachman has a really good personality. He was good in wrestling, and when asked about wrestling, he talks real favorably about it. So I like Coachman.
I had the pleasure of speaking with Al Burke, Mr. Outrageous Al Burke, a few months ago, and he is essentially just enhancement talent in his time in WWF back in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, he was saying, Alex, that just being in the ring with Andre the Giant, just being in the ring with Jake the Snake Roberts and Macho Man Savage and these guys was such an honor, such a thrill. Who can say it? You know, Big John Studd, Ultimate Warrior. And I would imagine for Jonathan Coachman, win or lose, just being in the ring with Stone Cold Steve Austin that night would have been so memorable. So I understand his disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it this Monday on Raw. CM Punk was in the ring against Jerry Lawler, and the first spot of the match was him taking a punch by Lawler, because Lawler has those wonderful punches. And you know that's something CM Punk had to have demanded, you know, like, I want you to hit me with a punch. And, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you get an opportunity to step in the ring with, you know, someone you really respect, someone that's a veteran, it's an awesome moment.
And how about the fact that Jonathan Coachman and like you said, Todd Grisham, working for ESPN, that's pretty cool.
Absolutely it is. I mean, the worldwide sports leader, as they're known. It's interesting because in a lot of facets, I guess, professional wrestling is looked at like, oh, he's a prior pro wrestler. You know, Brock Lesnar kind of used it as his heel tactic in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, like, oh, the pro wrestler. But ESPN's taking these guys in with open arms. They have broadcasting experience. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times in 2012, sometimes job experience might not translate. I mean, I found that out when I was looking for a new job. Like, I've experienced doing this, but maybe not that. But ESPN apparently took him in and accredited his pro wrestling broadcasting experience. And it's nice to see those guys transition to other forms of entertainment. Because let's face it, David, sports is entertainment across the board.
Well, to me, it's really no different than The Rock getting a movie role or Stone Cold Steve Austin getting a movie role. You know, Jonathan Coachman is a performer, and ESPN hires performers for their sports center and those types of programming.
I agree with you 100%, but, I mean, we've seen pro wrestlers have difficult transitions. I mean, I remember last year on the Wendy Williams show, Hulk Hogan, he kind of sounded sad, you know? I mean, he's a guy who tried to get into movies, didn't get the biggest roles in movies, even though he's one of the larger professional wrestlers ever. And not everyone has such a smooth transition, but it's nice when one of those guys does.
Before we call Scrap Iron Adam Pearce here, let's touch on Hulk Hogan real quick, because when he was at the height of his powers back in the late 80s, and they tried to get him into movies, I think the difference, Alex, though, is they tried to get Hogan into kids' movies and to real family-friendly movies. I know The Rock did a lot of kids' movies, but also Stone Cold Steve Austin did a lot of adult-themed movies. And I think the thing with Hulk Hogan is they always kind of marketed him towards the kids. You know, and the Suburban Commando was a terrible movie he did. So they just didn't give him the right roles because they wanted to market him towards a certain demographic.
You know, and that could be potentially true as well. Recently we saw the DVD and Blu-ray release of No Holds Barred, which is one of his bigger movies in the 80s. And actually they followed it up with, a pay-per-view where it was a cage match between Hogan and Beefcake against Zeus and Macho King. And, you know what? It could have been that he was involved in campy movies. My wife, for the first time, saw Mr. Nanny last week. But, he may be a bad example, but he is an example of a wrestler who didn't necessarily transfer that well in the movies.
Right. I actually took off school half a day with a bunch of friends and I. We went to breakfast. This was a big deal when I was, 15, 16 years old. We went to breakfast. We had this day all planned out. We went and saw No Holds Barred that afternoon. And then I wanted to jump off a cliff afterward. It was so bad.
I saw it when I was 4 or 5, so I think I liked it, but I don't remember.
The human wrecking ball, Zeus. But he never really wrecked anybody in the ring, did he?
No, and then he went to WCW to get defeated by Hogan in the Triple Tower of Doom in 1996, uncensored.
That's why I love having you as a co-host. That's good trivia. Why don't we go ahead and welcome the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, to the program. What do you say?
Let's go ahead and do that.
Hello, Adam. Welcome to the program.
I appreciate you guys having me. How are you?
Doing well. My name is David Buckler. I'm joined by my co-host, Alex Goff, and we certainly thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
It's certainly my pleasure. Appreciate you having me.
First of all, how's your summer been?
So far, so good. Busy, which is a good thing. In anybody's professional wrestling life, when they're traveling a lot like I am, it's good to be on the road. It's good to be making money.
Mm-hmm. And congratulations on being a 5-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion.
Appreciate that.
Now, currently, you and Colt Cabana are engaged in a 7 Levels of Hate series, which is getting a great buzz around the wrestling community. This is really unique, the series of matches with different stipulations for each match. We've seen a Best of 7 series before, but never contested like this. Could you tell us a little bit how this concept was developed?
Well, I mean, it's bread of competition and passion. I mean, it's no secret to anybody who's followed either Cabana or myself that we've been connected virtually for the last 15 years in the professional wrestling business, and even before that as high school football players against each other. So a lot of the seeds for this were planted, you know, 17, 18 years ago in the grasses of football fields in Northern Illinois. But to get back to Seven Levels of Hate, he's the only man who's defeated me twice for the world title, and I made it my notion to basically one-up him and do double what he's done to me, and the only way to do that was to beat him four times, and the best way to do that, in my opinion, was the Seven Levels Best of Seven series, so here we are.
So you kind of explained your side of it, Adam, but at the time, Colt Cabana was the NWA champion, and he isn't known for wrestling these type of matches. How did you get him to accept the terms of these matches with you?
Put my career on the line. Simple. If I can't beat Colt Cabana in his Best of Seven series, four matches, I've got to win, then I'll walk away. And I think that's the bottom line there.
Well, Adam, you certainly aren't making it any easier on yourself. September 21st, you defend the NWA Championship against the Monster of the Midwest, Sadus. And on September 22nd, you defend against Heath Hatton. What happens if you lose the title to either man?
Well, you're forgetting that a week prior to that, or 10 days prior to that, I'll do four shots in Canada. So, I mean, I've got six or seven shots before I get back to Seven Levels of Hate there, which will culminate again on the 30th, if I got my dates right, the 30th. Actually, and I'm booked the 29th, too, out in Virginia. So, again, there's seven or eight matches that, you're right, I could potentially lose the belt to anybody. And that's really not what the series is about. The series is not about the championship. It's who's the better man. It's never been about the championship.
Does the fact that if you lose one more match against Colt Cabana, your wrestling career is over, hang over your head, and does it affect your performance in the ring?
I don't think so. You know, I'm the one that called for it. I'm the one that put the stipulation out there. I'm the one that put everything on the line, you know, and if I didn't find myself in a position to be confident, think that I could defeat Colt Cabana in a series like that, I don't think it'd be dumb enough to put it all on the line. Now, certainly it didn't come out, you know, and start the way I would like it. I was down 3-0 before I blinked.
Right.
But slowly I'm creeping back in there 3-2, and if there was a competent referee in Minnesota at the beginning of July, I'd be up 3-2. So, you know, it's one of those things, and all you do is keep going.
It must be really exciting for you, though, to be in this kind of series when you have the history. I did not know that you two competed against each other in high school football, and here you are in a really high-profile professional wrestling series. That's got to be very rewarding.
Yeah, on a lot of levels. I mean, when you kind of separate the anger and the hatred and the angst and take a step back and kind of just look at the career paths of him and myself and where we began and where we've gone and kind of where we've been intertwined in the last 15 years or so, it's really gratifying on that level. Absolutely. It's something I'll look back on probably in 10 or 15 years and be really proud of.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the fact that you were in a different situation when this challenge was made. You were the challenger. Now you're the champion. And how do you kind of prepare? I mean, the fact that each match has a different stipulation, is there a match type that you feel you're better suited for than others? Or you feel like, you know, you just got to buckle down and whatever's presented in front of you, that's what you got to do?
You know, at this point, down 3-2, knowing that if I lose one more, it's over, it's really all about kill or be killed at this point. I don't really... There's no game plan that you can go through. Again, when you have the familiarity of somebody like Colt Cabana, there's nothing that I'm going to do to him or try to do to him that he won't be expecting and vice versa. So to even try and go out there and outsmart a man that has known you for literally half your life, I think is foolish. And at this point, like I said, we're backed into a corner of the way I am. I've got nowhere to go except forward. And, you know, either that or go home. So it's all about fight and continue to fight until you can't fight anymore.
You competed as the 2001 King of Indies, and that crop of wrestlers have kind of taken over the wrestling world. I mean, on that show, you had American Dragon, Brian Danielson, you had yourself, Samoa Joe, Spanky. I'm leaving out a ton of names. Even
sure.
Newsletter writer Brian Alvarez wrestled on the show, and I believe he competed in a match with you. What is it about that crop of wrestlers during that time that later made all of you gentlemen so successful?
I think it's passion. I think it's a huge collection of guys who love the professional wrestling industry and were brought into it the right way and have taken those foundations that were given to us by our trainers and taken the passion that came along with it and just basically it's just been able to ride the wave. And obviously the business continues to evolve and change and we all do with it. in some degree, and I think the thing that hasn't wavered in any of us is the love we have for the industry. It's definitely a unique business and something that I'll always be very proud to be a part of.
Adam, do you think that when your career is over, that you would consider these matches, this you know, seven levels of hate series, among the defining moments of your career?
I don't know. Hard to say. I mean, so far so good, I guess. When you look at the overall package and how things have gone, being one win short of being ahead is kind of a bummer. But at the same time, you know, it's the whole journey. It's about being able to take this series literally across the country and do it with a competitor like Colt Cabana. So, I mean, I don't want to say now, yeah, because it's not over with, but I have a good notion thinking, looking back on this thing a few years from now, that I'm going to be pretty proud of it, and I hope Cabana will be too.
Well, you certainly have had a great career. You can be very proud of it. And have you noticed that the fans for this series have really been excited? I mean, have you noticed the crowd reaction? When you come to the town, they know it's one of these seven levels of hate series, that people are amped up for it.
Yeah, and that's gratifying, obviously. It's something that you want to look forward to, and I think that's one of the things that we sold promoters on when we put this thing together so many months back. I mean, it's good for a plan to be put together on paper and have it look good. It's even better than when it comes to fruition and you bring that to life. So, again, there's a lot of things to be happy about.
What made you gravitate to professional wrestling?
Great question. I think, I was a decent high school football player, and I was looking to play college ball, and I was stricken with acute muscular compartment syndrome, and that took football away from me at a young age.
Wow.
And I think it was kind of a right place, right time kind of thing for me. I fell into professional wrestling not really out of desire. I mean, I was always kind of a wrestling fan, but I never had any aspirations to be a professional wrestler. And when athletics was taken away from me in one sense, professional wrestling kind of afforded me the opportunity to get back a lot of things that I was used to. And it snowballed, and it's been a wonderful 17 years.
Well, at what age did you become a professional wrestling fan?
I began training at the age of 16, and right before I turned 17, I had my first match May 16 of 1996. So I was 17 years old.
Did the sport come naturally to you?
I think my trainers would say that. Looking back on it, I mean, I think I was brought along the right way. I wasn't given too much too soon. I wasn't crazy like some of these young kids are now, and I didn't have aspirations to do flips or anything like that. You know, I mean, I've been very fortunate over the last 15 or so years to have been relatively injury-free considering the kind of schedule that I keep. And I'm very proud of that, and being on an independence without any television exposure. And I'm working 2, 3, 4 times a week, so I can't complain about that. My body's held up. I'm not exactly a spring chicken anymore, but still kicking.
That's interesting. You're talking about the illness you had as a young man. It took away maybe the hopes of college football, but why was wrestling still an option? Was it more because you weren't under the time pressure, whereas with college football, you know, you're coming right out of high school into that? This way you could kind of recover from that and go into pro wrestling?
Yeah, I played football at 279 pounds as a left tackle.
Oh.
And I had to basically learn how to walk all over again. So I went from about 280 pounds to about 219 pounds in months. And most of that, truthfully, wasn't due to anything physical. It was a huge, huge, depression that I was set into. I was dead set on playing football. And as an adolescent, of course, you're going through changes physically anyway.
Yeah.
And when that was all taken away from me, I went into, basically crawled into a hole for probably 6 months. And when I came out, professional wrestling was there and afforded me the kind of an opportunity and a ladder to climb out of that hole. So, I didn't have the ability then to go back to the recruiters and the coaches that I was dealing with for Division I college football and say, hey, can I play tackle at 220 pounds? But it just wasn't an option. And at that point, mentally, I'd moved on. So, professional wrestling gave me a new challenge and a new outlook on things and a new vehicle to kind of get back into an athletic fold, and that's exactly what I did.
So, Adam, you started in the Midwest and then moved to Southern California. What was that transition like from moving from the Midwest to Southern California?
Well, you know, I moved to California to really, if I'm being honest, to get away from wrestling. I had just done some very short cups of coffee with WCW, and I did not like how that went, and I didn't like the taste that it left in my mouth of upper-level, big-time pro wrestling. And decided I was going to go back to school and moved out to Southern California, which is where my wife is originally from, and was looking to kind of start over. But as the story goes, once you're bit by the wrestling bug, you kind of are in it until it no longer wants you. So it wasn't very much longer, probably 7-8 months before I was working again, this time, like you said, on the left coast. And, you know, wrestling is wrestling. There's good bad wrestling, and there's a lot of that in the Midwest, and there was a lot of that on the west coast at that time too. So it was just a fresh place and a new start, and I was excited about it.
Have you accepted the San Diego Chargers into your life, Adam?
I have. I have kids. My son, you know, I'm a Packer fan, always have been, always will be. In fact, I watched them tonight before we talked, and the Chargers are on TV right now getting their heads kicked in by the 49ers. But I root for the home team, and I've lived in San Diego for, I don't know, a dozen years now, so it's hard not to root for the home team.
Well, you've literally wrestled, though, all over the world. And are there any territories, though, that stand out, you know, as real high points of your career, times that you really enjoyed?
Sure. I think all of them at one point or another. You know, there's very few places that I went to once and said, wow, I didn't like this. And surprisingly, if I was going to pick one of those, it would be Japan, although I didn't not enjoy Japan. I just never have really been drawn to that style. If I was going to pick one place that I love going to, and hands down, when I get a phone call or a request, I go without asking any questions, it's Mexico usually. I've loved just the way the culture looks at pro wrestling, or lucha libre as it's known down there, and the way the wrestlers are accepted and revered, and just the interaction between the fans and the performers is incredible. And I've had some wonderful times down there.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about your rivalry here with Colt Cabana, of course, and he is good friends with WWE champion CM Punk. Are you friends with Punk to this day?
I was there for the very first day that both Punk and Cabana put on a pair of wrestling boots. I've known them both for their entire wrestling careers.
Mm-hmm. Probably crazy to see how CM Punk has really, you know, polarized and galvanized and, you know, been such a huge headliner here this past, couple years here in WWE.
Very proud of him. You know, I mean, I think it's a testament to perseverance and working through things and believing in yourself and believing in what you believe in to the point that you're willing to fight for it. And, you know, at some point, I don't know how many of you or the listeners have watched this DVD, but I think some of the stories that are told there really only scratch the surface of the passion and the conviction that the man has. And it's really, really humbling and gratifying to see him. I'm very proud of the way that he and Cabana have conducted themselves, not only, you know, on a mainstream level for Punk, but just in general, the way that they respect the business and the way that they treat the people that are around the business. It's something to be very proud of. And to be around them for their formative years in the business in the late 90s and to see where they've both come as both performers and men is really humbling, and I'm very, very proud. I don't know how any way to say it. I get speechless at some points just thinking about it.
Well, you certainly, too, can be very proud of how you've matured as a wrestler and your career. And I wanted to ask you, though, do you still get butterflies? You know, when the bell rings, you know, you've been doing this for a while, but do you still get nervous?
Yeah, I think it, as any athlete or any performer would tell you, when you stop getting the butterflies, it's time to go home. And, you know, you're out there and you're there for a reason. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't. And, in fact, I'm always waiting for those butterflies to kick in. And I think on a lot of levels kind of heightens your senses and keeps you focused and gets you in tune with what the job at hand is. And, yeah, for me, I could tell you plain as day, the time that comes where my ring music hits or whatever the case may be, and I don't have that feeling in my gut, I'll know that that's the last match I walk to the ring for.
The members of the Gold Bond Mafia has found a lot of success. And I asked you this actually a couple years ago. Dave Prazak, of course, the promoter of Shimmer, yourself, NWA World Champion, CM Punk, World Wrestling Entertainment Champion, and Colt Cabana, your current rival. What happened to Chucky Smooth?
You know, man, he's doing well, and I'm proud to say that there was a time where we didn't know what Mr. Charles Smooth would be doing with his life. He fell into some hard times, and as some of the boys have along the way. proud to say that he's picked his life up and he's doing his thing and he's taking care of business, man. He will always be one of the boys.
Well, the NWA World Championship that you currently have around your waist, of course, the NWA has gone through a lot of transformations over the years, but there's a lot of heritage to that title. Can you tell us about the pride you feel being the champion and carrying that prestigious title?
Well, I mean, first of all, the way that I personally feel about the belt is it's the godfather to all of the wrestling championships in our country.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you looked at the lineages of each of those belts, you'd see where I'm going with that. So with that in mind, I think it's an entirely different level of respect. I think that ties into passion and understanding your craft and knowing the history of your business. And for me, anyway, in that belt, I like to think that I treat it with the respect and the dignity that it deserves based on the history of our business. And I know some people haven't felt that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that's kind of what separates me from other people. I've made it a point to really go out there when I'm NWA champion and do it my predecessors, guys like Jack Briscoe and Harley Race and Dusty Rhodes and, of course, Ric Flair. And that's why I've been so adamant about traveling and being around the world with this thing and taking the championship to places that it hadn't been in decades. And I'm extremely proud of that, to be able to take it back to Kansas City after 20 years and to take it back to St. Louis after 25 years. And the first person to take it back to Australia since Harley Race did it 33 years ago.
Right.
And to Des Moines, where the NWA began, for all intents, to go back there first time in 30 years. I mean, I take a lot of pride in that. And I think it says something not only about me as a performer, but to the wrestling fans and the diehards, that the brand can mean something if you use it the right way. And I'll always believe that.
Well, I was going to list, you know, the great wrestlers that you've been in the ring with, and it's just too long. I don't have time. I wanted to ask you, though, is there anybody you haven't wrestled that you just would love to lock up with?
I love getting this question. It's always the same answer. Somebody that I've always admired for, geez, going on 20 years, probably one of my favorite human beings, whether in or out of wrestling, and somebody that I can't figure out for the life of me why I haven't actually locked up with, and that's Jerry Lynn, somebody I really admire and really respect, and I call him Uncle Jerry. He's been there for me in a lot of ways, and of course, it would be nice to have the respect and the honor of locking up with him for sure.
Yeah, now, since you've been doing this for a while, and is the potential that you may have to retire here if you lose to Colt Cabana in this Seven Levels of Hate series that you have going on, you have a little time here now to reflect on your career. Do you still love professional wrestling? Anytime you do something as a job, it can become a job. Do you still have that love for it that you had when you started to get into it?
I like to say that wrestling is a love-hate relationship, and I'm able to love it and hate it at the same time. So, yeah, the answer is yes. I love professional wrestling. There are days when if it could manifest itself into physical form, I would literally strangle it until it no longer took a breath. But at the end of the day, you know, I kiss my kids goodnight. I kiss my wife goodnight. And if I could, I'd probably kiss professional wrestling goodnight as well.
You know what, Adam? I don't want to ruin your image. I mean, you're a bad guy. You'll bring a chain to the ring. If the ref's not looking, you'll cheat. But mentorship is something I always remember you by. I mean, you taking the time to talk to young wrestlers. Can you briefly explain how important that is for you as a veteran wrestler to take the time to do that?
You know, again, that's something that I take a lot of pride in. And I think it really, as I said about other things, it really boils down to respecting your craft and understanding that I have been very fortunate along the way to have been mentored and taught and shown things by absolute Hall of Fame people in this business, guys like Nick Bockwinkle and guys like J.J. Dillon and guys like Jimmy Cornette and guys like Ric Flair and Terry Funk, just to be able to kind of usurp some of the knowledge and experiences that they've had along the way. I feel like it's my duty to pass those along to guys that are younger than me, and I had some good experiences in the last 2 weeks and was able to suck some knowledge from another legend of my mind, William Regal, and he basically said the same thing to me. You know, you continue to do what you're doing, take the knowledge that you've acquired and pass that on and help to make the business better from its ground up. And that's really, I mean, that's kind of what my mission is at this point, man. I mean, I'm not getting any younger. I couldn't tell you how much longer I actually have as an active performer. But the time that I do have left, I want to spend passing on this brain full of knowledge that I've acquired along the way. And you know, I know there's a point in time where I'm not going to be able to use it, but I feel like now so many young guys out there doing the business. I'd love to see them all do it the right way, and if I can help in any way, shape, or form, I feel like it's my duty to do that.
Your current rival, Colt Cabana, is quite the internet following. He uses social media to gain attention to what he's doing, so his fans are always in the loop. How do you personally use social media?
You know what, man? I was never a fan of the internet. I've always kind of, the guys call me old school, whatever that means. I'm not exactly the most computer savvy person in the world, but I have to say, you know, Cabana's a master at that 100%, and he's used that perfectly. You know, that's what he went to school for, so I'm glad that he understands that sports marketing, because he earned his degree. But yeah, I've been able to suck some knowledge off him along the way, and with the help of guys like David Lagana, you know, I finally relented. I have a Facebook, I have a Twitter. That's about as far as I go with it. But I will say this, man. I've sold a hell of a lot of T-shirts because of Facebook, so thank you.
Well, you may not be a huge fan of it, but it really does allow people around the world to see your matches, people that otherwise would not be able to.
Well, I'm a big fan of it now from the standpoint of accessibility. Just like you said, I mean, it's free, you know, until the government decides they don't want it to be free anymore. It's free, and it's to me, asinine, especially as a group of independent contractors, which is what, for all intents, everyone that performs in the wrestling business is, to not take advantage of that, to market yourself and to establish a level of brand awareness for you, because that's exactly what you should be doing. You're building your own brand. To not use these things to your advantage, to me, is like going to home plate and never swing at a pitch. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, especially as we go forward, the internet is huge. It's only getting bigger. More and more platforms are going to be internet-based only. I think the days of television wrestling are numbered.
Hmm.
You know, I don't think that's going away in the next decade or so, but I think you're going to start to see a lot more internet-based programming, and I think that that's the way media is going as a whole. So I would encourage anybody, especially someone in the professional wrestling business on an independent level now, to get on that horsey now and ride it before it's too far ahead of you.
Now, Adam, like you said earlier, that you do take mentorship seriously. Will we ever see the Forging Iron School or Adam Pearce's wrestling school open up in Southern California?
I doubt it, only because I don't know that I have the patience to cultivate that kind of business. And the other side of the coin is there's a life for me outside of professional wrestling that includes two young kids who need mentoring on a whole different level. And I think, obviously, that would come first before anything else. But, I mean, never say never. I enjoy the training aspect of things. I enjoy teaching. I enjoy mentoring young wrestlers. It's just a matter of finding the right situation that works for everything that involves my life. So, I don't know.
Well, before we finish up here, tell our listeners where they can find you. Is there a website or Twitter or Facebook, like you mentioned earlier, that you'd like to promote, Adam?
Sure. Facebook, I think it's Scrap Iron Pearce, and of course I probably should have known that before I came on the show with you. And then on Twitter is at Scrap Daddy AP. You can find out where I'm going to be, what I'm happy about, what I'm pissed about, all of the nonsensical, whimsical, ridiculous things that come out of my mind will probably find their way onto those two platforms.
Well, Adam, I'm certainly a fan of yours, and I hate to see your career end, so good luck in your series with Colt Cabana, and thank you for joining us here on OWW Radio.
I appreciate it, man. All the good wishes and good vibes you can send to Salem, Oregon for September 30th. We're at Stage 6 of 7 Levels of Hate, where Cabana and I will engage in a Texas death match. I will accept. Thank you very much. Be good.
Okay. Thank you again. Alex, great having the NWA World Champion on the show today. I got to tell you, I love the 7 Levels of Hate. I love the idea of it. And I don't really care who wins. I think it's just fascinating. I just don't want Adam to retire.
I mean, it seems like every week I'm saying, you know, for the smaller companies, you have to do something different than what World Wrestling Entertainment's doing, especially at the independent level, quote unquote.
Yep.
And the 7 Levels of Hate is definitely something different. And, I mean, you notice it. You know, oh, Colt Cabana and Adam Pearce, two of the biggest names in independent wrestling, are fighting in 7 different types of matches all across the country. And, man, were you surprised, David, to hear how many different places Adam defends the NWA championship on top of doing the 7 Levels of Hate with Colt Cabana?
That actually really shocked me, because the seven levels of hate built around the championship, built around his career, that's enough to worry about. And then also booking all these other matches in different areas. It shows you, Alex, the territorial feel still of the NWA.
Absolutely. You know, in preparation for this interview, that was actually going to be a question I was going to ask. Are you still defending the NWA championship during the seven levels of hate? And then just, you know, doing some research very mildly, I found out that, yes, he's defending the title a ton, including defenses right before he wrestles Colt. So it's very interesting just how the NWA championship in 2012 still gets defended a ton of times.
Yeah, and what I liked about this interview also is, you know, his obvious pride that Colt Cabana and himself that have known each other as long as they have really reached a very, very, very high level in professional wrestling. They can both be very proud. I wish the Seven Levels of Hate was coming around to the Washington, D.C. area here. I would love to have seen one of these matches, respect both of them a tremendous amount. And like you said, kind of doing something different here. I thought they both kind of deserve a tip of the cap for a creative storyline.
It's just interesting the backstory these guys have. I mean, for those who are in the know, I guess. I mean, these two guys go back before even IWA Mid-South, where in 2001, these two guys were featured in IWA Mid-South. Their background goes even before that. So it's a long, long-standing feud. It's very, very interesting. It's not something you normally get in professional wrestling at any level. I mean, John Cena and CM Punk are wrestling at the next pay-per-view. What's their history go back a couple of years? I mean, Adam said these guys' history goes back to high school.
Yeah.
So it's very, very interesting, David.
So the seven levels of hate, as we mentioned, each match has a different stipulation. And Alex, normally we do a radio show, you know, very standard radio show. We're looking to switch things up here. We're thinking of going live. Maybe we'll do a live broadcast here next week, and maybe we'll take callers. They can call and talk to us on the air. What do you think about that?
If the fan support, I think, is there for us to try this endeavor, is the correct word. I think the fan support is there for us to try this endeavor, and it's something I'm really excited about, to get fan interaction. It's not that I don't like talking to you, David, but like I said, you know, maybe we agree too much. Maybe we need some fans to come in here and mix it up for us.
Shake it up. Be guest referees, right? Well, the thing is, basically, just make sure your wife's on standby and my wife's on standby, so if nobody calls the show, we at least have two callers.
Well, what's interesting is that we have a pretty good guest lined up for next week, David.
Yeah, we have a good show. Next week, we have one of the producers of the new ECW documentary, John Filipavage, I believe is how you pronounce it, John Filipavage, to join us next week to talk about that new ECW documentary. You and I, Alex, talked about this on the program, a little skeptical about whether we need another one, but now coming out, as we hear more and more about it, it sounds interesting and it sounds like something you are going to want to see.
You know, and that, like I said last week, I mean, what else can be said about the ECW story? So I thought, you know, who better to interview on the podcast than the producer of this documentary, where we can ask him directly, what are you going to present new about Extreme Championship Wrestling? But if anything else, I mean, David, like I've always stated, I'm a huge ECW fan, so we'll be able to wax lyrical, I guess, about our favorite ECW moments. So, David, you have some research to do.
I do. And one thing I always respect about people that take the time to do a documentary like this is they're taking time away from friends and family and their job, and I give them an awful lot of credit. John Filipavage joins us next week on OWW Radio. Really interested to hear more about what he says and what his take is on ECW, what his documentary can tell us that maybe we haven't seen or heard in the past. So please join us next week. Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Or, if we go live here in a couple weeks, give us a call. We'll have an 800 number you can call in for free. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements, including that call-in number. We'll also post directly to the OWW Facebook homepage. Now, until next time, I am David.
And this is Alex.
We hope you enjoyed the program, and we also would like to thank, again, NWA World Heavyweight Champion Scrap Iron Adam Pearce for joining us. It was a pleasure to have him on the program, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
all right, well, that's okay.